I happen to be flipping through a Mexican magazine, and I see a picture of what looks like some old man in a bathrobe and sandals. And the caption said he had won a 100-mile race through the Rocky Mountains. It was a 55-year-old man who had not only run 100 miles in sandals, but beat an elite core of American ultra runners. So what I wanted to find out was, now what's that guy doing that the rest of us aren't?
That's writer and journalist Christopher McDougall. Laid low by running injuries and a doctor's order to take up biking instead, McDougall stumbled across the Tarahumara tribe of Mexico in a magazine. They seemed to be an incredibly reclusive tribe of super runners who could run for days without tiring, with smiles on their faces. McDougall set out on a quest to find them and learn their secrets for his book, Born to Run.
It turned out to be a pretty difficult job just to try to track down the Tarahumara. Where did you start?
I had this misconception, as I think a lot of us do, that anything in the modern world is reachable if you just sort of get the right, you know, travel connections. So I asked around, and nobody would agree to take me down to the Copper Canyons. I did find a guy who knew a guy whose brother had been down there before to bring, like, school supplies to some of the little schoolhouses along the rim of the canyon. But as it turned out, though, Salvador knew his stuff, and after about a week of trekking on foot and by, you know, four-wheel drive through these incredible forests and weaving our way sort of clandestinely through drug cartel territories, we actually located a little Tarahumara settlement where the greatest Tarahumara runner, Arnulfo Quimade, still lives today. So Arnulfo was, as the Tarahumara are, he was very hospitable. You know, he came out of his hidden hut, and we're actually standing on his roof before I even realized that we were near his house. You know, Salvador said, "We're here." I looked around. I didn't see anything. He was like pointing down. We're on his roof. Arnulfo came outside, and he brought us this big basket of sweet limes. And we sat down, and we sucked limes, and we looked at each other. And I asked question after question for about 4 hours. And Arnulfo said absolutely nothing. He just kept gazing off over the river, just waiting for me to go away. And finally, you know, as the sun was setting over the canyons, we finally slunk away.
Why wouldn't he answer your questions?
You know, I learned that later on. We had the good fortune to find a little Tarahumara schoolhouse a few miles down the river. And the schoolmaster had spent some time out of the canyons up in Chihuahua. And what he told me was that, you know, back in the times of the conquistadors and subsequently when different colonizers have tried to press gang the Tarahumara into service. And that includes gold miners and silver miners and logging bandits and now the drug cartels. The way they would approach the Tarahumara village is to start asking questions. You know, where is everybody? You know, who's around? Who's the strongest guy? Who can carry the gold for us? And the Tarahumara have learned just never answer questions when posed by strangers.
Hmm. So the Tarahumara wouldn't talk to you, but then you began to hear whispers about this mysterious white guy, the Caballo Blanco, the white horse, who'd maybe found the Tarahumara and had a relationship with them. Did you find him?
What happened was Angel, the schoolmaster, let us camp out that night at the bottom of the canyons outside of his schoolhouse. And the next morning at daybreak, we saw a huge band of Tarahumara children playing the typical Tarahumara running game. They were in ages from like 5 to 13, and they're running back and forth across this one-mile stretch of path. And in about an hour, they ran about 6 or 7 miles. This is like the little recess before they started classes. And to me, it's still mind-boggling that six-year-old kids would run like a fast trail 10K before starting school in the morning. And as I was watching them run, I was really sort of energized because it was a kind of running that I'd never seen before, just really light and fast and effortless. Kids were joyful. Everybody's having a blast. And I started to really press the schoolmaster with questions. Like, you know, who can show me how to do that? Just someone give me a lesson. That's all I want to learn. And he said, look, none of the Tarahumara here are going to talk to you. Just take that as a fact. It's not going to happen. The guy you want to talk to is the white horse. And that hung in the air. I'm like,
this sounds like a Western.
Yeah, I know. And what white horse? And he starts to tell me the story about some mysterious stranger who had arrived down in the canyons 15 years earlier. No one knew his name or where he'd come from or how old he was, but all they knew was he was a pretty gracious guy. He was like ghostly pale. He'd been hanging out in the canyons for more than a decade, and that he had learned how to run like the Tarahumara. He had turned himself into a 21st century Tarahumara. And as it turned out, we ended up tracking him down in the little town of Creel up on the ridges of the canyon.
What was he like?
I had found Caballo at a unique time in his life, and the only time in his life, I think, where he would be willing to answer questions. And the reason why is because, as I've been told, he'd gone down there to learn the secrets of the Tarahumara. And the first step toward that is by being trustworthy and discreet and not bothering them. And the last thing he wanted was a bunch of guys like me hanging around. On the other hand, he was really concerned that in our lifetime, the Tarahumara could essentially vanish from the planet. There are fewer than 40,000 traditional Tarahumara who still exist. And literally day by day, their numbers diminish as the cartels push deeper and deeper into the canyons. So Caballo had this idea that what if he set up his own race down there in the bottom of the canyons on the Tarahumara's home territory, which would let outside runners come in and go toe-to-toe with the Tarahumara and then go back to their homes with these tales of this ancient wisdom that the rest of us can benefit from.
You became his publicist.
So right.
Did he figure out, and did you, what is so special about the way the Tarahumara run? I mean, do they have some genetic advantage?
When someone does something way better than the rest of us, there's only two explanations. Either, as you said, there's some kind of weird genetic mutation, or they're exactly the same as we are, and they just do it differently. In the case of the Tarahumara, it's just B. They are exactly the same as we are. They just do it differently. But beyond that, what I started to understand as I started to dig into the anthropology of humans as just distance runners is that not only are they the same as we are genetically, they are the same as we have been for most of our existence. The Tarahumara are only doing what humans have done for nearly 2 million years before we became afraid of running.
What do you mean before we became afraid of running?
You know, it's a funny thing if you start to read into folklore and mythologies and any kind of legends that running is always associated with freedom and vitality and eternal youth. You know, the ancient kings of Egypt used to have to run a long distance course every year in order to maintain their hold on the throne. And there are Egyptian kings that were doing this into their 90s. There are tales of Navajos and Apaches and Hopis who were running long distances deep into old age. Almost every indigenous group uses distance running as a rite of passage from childhood into adulthood. But it's only in our lifetime, literally since the 1970s, that running has become associated with fear and pain and injury. You never see that written anywhere. You never read accounts of running in the 40s and 50s and 60s where people are afraid of their knees or their IT bands or modern running shoes are the virus. They are the cause of the problem. We have tried to out-engineer nature. And the result has been, as it often is when we try to outthink nature, we have set forward this epidemic of unintended consequences known as the modern running injury.
So is this the Tarahumara secret, just that they run barefoot or in flimsy little sandals? Is that it?
You know, I wish it could be more dramatic than that. You know, I wish they had some kind of magical herb that I could sort of mass produce and sell. But essentially, it's it. What made all the difference for me was when I took off my shoes and started to run in my bare feet, and learned how to run gently on my bare feet, that was it. Problem solved.
You're kidding.
A couple of things that happened, Anne. Number one was, so there I was in September of 2005, and Caballo was going to put this race on in 9 months. He said, come back in March, I'm going to put on the 50-mile race. And if you can run 50 miles, you can participate in this race. Well, at that point in September, I had not run a step in about 4 or 5 years. So I am absolutely at level zero. You can't be more of a beginner than I was. Within 9 months, I went from not running a step at all and being a good 50 pounds overweight. 9 months later, I could participate in this 50-mile race, had lost 40 pounds, and have not had an injury since.
So what was it like for you running in that 50-mile race with the Tarahumara?
It was, I could say, almost indescribable. It was so fun. More than anything else, I think that sort of lightning bulb over your head moment, like, hey, it really works. You know, I wasn't sure until this moment. But now that I am, you know, 45 miles into a 50-mile run in a canyon in a, you know, 102-degree heat, and I'm still moving, it really works. And that's what was so absolutely electrifying.
Were you surprised? I mean, can you take me back to that race? Was the whole thing pleasant, or what was it like from beginning to end?
You know, until the moment, literally the second the starting gun fired in the air, I had no idea if it was actually going to happen. Because after I left Caballo, and returned to the United States. You know, I had this idea, and he had taught me a few tricks for how to run like the Tauromata, but, you know, I wasn't really sure if this was going to work. And it was just one bizarre, lucky coincidence after the other. I happened to be doing a different magazine assignment, started to chat with a guy who trains endurance athletes in Wyoming. I mentioned the Tauromata, and this guy is suddenly on fire because he's always wanted to learn about the Tauromata. So he made me a deal. He said, look, I will coach you. I'll do your training for you. And in return, you got to get me into that race. So I strike a deal with this guy, who turns out to be a fantastic coach. The next thing was Scott Jorick, who's the greatest ultra runner on planet Earth. He read an article I wrote for Runner's World, and something he was in. Then a guy named Barefoot Ted, who lives in Burbank and trains by pulling his wife and daughters down the streets in a rickshaw. He wants to get in. And then these two surfers from Virginia Beach who, when they're not, you know, lifeguarding and surfing, are out running 100-mile races in their surf shorts. They want to go in.
So if nothing else, you met some really interesting people.
Yeah. So what I got a chance to see was, not only did this race come together, but I was able to see before my own eyes that there are definitely transferable skills there. That the things that Tauromata are doing, other people are stumbling upon those secrets by accident, and they work.
So the starting gun went off. At what point in the race did you realize this is really fun?
So there we are, all lined up in the middle of nowhere, this town of Urique at the bottom of the canyons. And of course, Jen and Billy, the two surfers, were missing. Literally, we started the countdown. We're down to like, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7. Where are Jen and Billy? Nobody knows. They come rocketing up to the starting line with 3 seconds to go. Bam, the shotgun fires off. And suddenly there were about 25 Tauromata and about 7 of us, you know, non-Tauromata runners, all, you know, charging pell-mell down this trail. And Kabayev's genius was, rather than a traditional race course, he'd set this race course up in the form of a Y. So the course was constantly doubling back on itself at different branches. So you could not only be in the race, but you could actually see the race unfolding in real time, because as the leaders were coming back down one branch of the Y, they were coming toward me, so I could see everybody, and then they go up and down again. So for the first, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles, I always had somebody to look at and was just utterly enthralling. I could watch Scott Jorick, you know, the greatest American ultra runner, going stride for stride with Arnulfo Quimade and Silvino, two of the Tauromata runners. So I could do like a real-time comparison of these guys. And as the race progressed, things were going really, really well. I was startled by the fact that I ran the fastest 26 miles I've ever run in my life in the first half of a 50-mile race. But where things started to get tough was right around mile 45 and 46 when, this being a pretty disorganized race, it ran out of water. And there I was, you know, miles from the finish line with no water, 102 degrees. And the only person offering me any aid was Barefoot Ted, who offered me a drink of his own urine, which I...
Did you accept or decline?
Politely declined. But what had happened was, you know, the Tauromata have a philosophy called Korima, which sounds a lot like karma, and it's a similar proposition. The Tauromata have no currency. They have no money, and their entire financial system is based on trading favors. And they have this belief that when you give something away, it's as if it were never yours in the first place, and you have to keep giving things in order to get things. Well, a couple days earlier, I had given this guy I met down in the canyons a knife. He had admired my knife. I gave it to him, and out of the blue, as I'm sitting down here miles from the finish line, utterly wiped out by heat and dying of thirst, I see this guy coming over the ridge of a hill shaking these 2 cans of ice-cold mango juice. And he'd come out looking for me, thought maybe I needed a drink, and you know, at the very moment I needed one, he appeared.
Christopher McDougall is the author of Born to Run. He's a dedicated, injury-free barefoot runner. Anne Strainchamp spoke with him.